Hello and welcome to the Game Slave Podcast, episode 119. I'm Proteus.
I'm Assimilator.
And I'm Zelda Queen.
And this week, we talk about film and movies mostly, and a few games.
Yeah, I've got most of the game stuff, don't I?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, since we've got less games than anything else, let's go ahead and intersperse it into the film and movies. You want to go ahead and start with the thing that,
Yeah, I guess the big news this week is that The Hobbit is going to be three films now. Per Peter Jackson and the studios, they put out press releases saying this. And actually, I should say the first announcement was on their Facebook page, and I and Zelda Queen at least were both kind of like, ah, really, guys? No, this someone's trolling us. Someone's hacked their Facebook and is making stuff up. But no, it was confirmed later. So
I don't know how to feel about it. I mean, I'm really excited to see. I'm like, well, The Hobbit's kind of a short book. It adding dependencies. Yeah, you could probably get, two movies, hour and a half in theaters out of it, maybe 2 hours. Who knows what it's like with whatever the extended cut will be. But I was like, a third? Really? Do we have enough material left to, pump out a third movie? And I don't want to wait.
It's only another 6 months, fortunately.
Yeah, granted, I guess the first one comes out December of this year, the next one's December of 2013, and the last one's actually summer of 2014. Which, granted, yay, I only have to wait 6 months versus a whole year. But, I don't know, I'm not that excited about it. I thought I would be, but I'm more just like,
Well, at least the people camping out for the movie will only freeze their asses off twice instead of three times.
I guess so.
I am uncertain. I guess I'm going to kind of reserve judgment until I
watch all three.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that the people that are involved in this project are all kind of individually awesome, and then putting them together just should just be superb, so.
We're hoping 1+1=2 awesome?
Hopefully, yes. Except it's more like, I can't remember how many, I don't know how many ones are in there. There's a lot.
We're just hoping that it actually has the exponential increase that we expect it to have. Instead of just, well, now we got too many creative people trying to do the same thing, and it's just going to counteract each other?
Well, still, the creative team is mainly still just the people from Lord of the Rings. I haven't added, I don't think, a whole lot new there. I was referring more to some of the actors who are just superb actors that are, seem really great for the parts they've been assigned, so.
Well, fingers crossed that it's going to be great.
You don't have too much longer before the first one comes out. We're about a little over 4 months away. It'll be here before we know it.
Just in time for the world to end.
No, because it comes out after! So the world is not ending. And also, if you've seen the thing saying that, the Mayans didn't believe in leap years and all this other sort of stuff, the end of the world actually already happened.
Interesting. I still follow the theory that some dude's wife told him to stop carving that blasted calendar. It's already how many years into the future? You can go back to it later. Anywho.
I guess my thought is, we're not going to know. It'll happen if we're not going to be prepared. No. We don't know when, so don't worry about it.
Moving on. The Tycoden beta recently started as of this week? Last week. Now, I originally signed up for this beta in 2010. And it just recently started now, so they've been doing some dev work on it. The game is being done by Gamers First, and what it is it's a space-based Twitch shooter MMO. Your controls basically are W and S, increase and decrease your throttle on your ship, A and D, strafe you left and right, Q and E, barrel roll you. And then you actually aim your ship with the mouse, and that's how you also target your enemies. It seems like they're doing an okay job. This is the first week of beta, so of course there are some bugs. I think there's supposed to be this one space station I'm supposed to be able to dock with, but it doesn't allow me to recognize the station or dock with it. Which is unfortunate, because docking with the station is the only way you can level up and change out gear on your ship.
You have all this high experience to burn, but nowhere to burn it!
Well, basically, I can dock in the first zone I go to, but when I go to the second zone is when I have the problem. So I have to go back a zone in order to upgrade my stuff, and then go forward a zone again. Which they actually do, the way they do it makes sense. They actually have little gates that you go to, and then you jump through them. And then in order to make some of the areas seem a little smaller than they actually are, they have little rings that you go through that'll speed you up, kind of like it's supposed to be a spaceway. So it makes sense, and then after you've been out of them for so long, usually like 3 seconds, you drop back down to your regular speed.
Slower traffic, please keep to the right.
Yeah, pretty much. What little I've played it, I actually am enjoying it so far. I could care less about the story. Basically, you have a bunch of humans that went into space, you were put asleep, and now you're a clone of the original. Whenever you die, basically, you respawn as your clone, and any quest progress your original person had is kind of is lost if you didn't, like, deliver a good or something. But that also means whenever you kill an enemy, it's kind of weird. It's like, okay, you shot him down, but he's probably going to try and come back that way. Wait, what? So it's kind of odd reading the quest text when they're talking about, you know, you killed him, good, he's going to come back that way, because they're talking about the clone that's going to come back. And there's two factions, ones that are trying to regulate the space trade and research on some alien technology that was found, and others that don't believe in that and want to basically take the resources and use them freely. So we've got regulation and absolute chaos. There's no happy medium between the two, apparently.
Whee! We have to be black and white!
Exactly. Let's see. So far, I actually, overall, am enjoying what I've played, though. I would like a little more explanation on, like, you're getting tracked by a missile. Okay. Now what do I do? There's no HUD indicator that actually shows you where the missile that's coming from. Just this little bar, which I think the bar is saying how close the missile is getting to hitting you. But again, there's nothing that actually explains that. So either there's some instruction book that I completely missed, or
readme.text.
I didn't even see that. So they got some splaining to do, Lucy. Let's see if anybody gets that reference.
Everyone gets that reference.
Not maybe the younger generation.
I think everyone knows I Love Lucy.
So, I don't know.
I don't know.
It's been in syndication for 50 years.
Ask your brother.
He would be a good test.
I suppose so.
Anywho. Wow, that was off subject.
Yeah.
The game has a lot of changes to go through. As I said, it's like the first week of beta. Anything in its first week of beta is going to have a lot of changes to go through.
Yeah.
And basically, you have two ways to get into it. If you didn't get a beta code and you did register for one, you can wait longer. Or you can do their pre-purchase system, which gets you their special credits. And basically, it'll get you into the beta. For those of you who don't know, Gamers First basically specializes in a lot of free-to-play games. Where then you can buy currency in order to make your life easier. But yeah, so far I'm enjoying it. I'm looking forward to getting into it a little more, maybe getting a little deeper into it. Let's see. You guys want to move on to your animes?
Sure. Can we talk about it?
Yeah, go. Okay. Go for it.
Okay. Zelda Queen and I have been watching an anime called Mushishi on Netflix streaming lately. And it's really good. It's kind of hard to describe. Mushi are these creatures. They're sort of
life in its purest form.
Yeah, it's how it's described in the series. They're almost like, you know, kind of like nature spirit type of things, but they're actually alive. It's like they're the things that people would have called nature spirits, but they aren't. That's not actually what they are.
Yeah.
To a degree, you know? But the story centers around a guy who is called a Mushi Master. He's basically an expert in these creatures. And he mostly goes around helping people when they're having trouble with the Mushi, which, you know, happens from time to time, because while the Mushi are not malevolent, they're not, you know, evil or anything, they sometimes do things that are inconvenient for people. Some of them are parasitic. Sometimes their way of life is just a, you know, kind of butt heads with people.
Like, there's this one Mushi that basically thrives on sound. It needs sound waves to exist and live. Well, during the winter in this remote village, the forest goes deadly quiet in the winter because the snow acts as a natural muffler and most of the critters are gone, and so it's really quiet. Well, the Mushi technically kind of starve, so they're looking for noise, and so they will implant themselves in human ear canals because the sound of people goes in through the ear, and that's where they think it, and they're wanting sustenance. So they go into your ear.
So But since they're sitting there absorbing the sound, makes it so people go deaf in that ear.
Yeah, but then they don't know why they're going deaf, and doctors can't diagnose it because most normal people can't see machines. Only a select few of people can actually see them. But what's kind of nice about this series is there's not an overarching plot, really.
Yeah, there's not been very much. There's been just basically, like, we're getting, over the course of the episode, we're getting just to know Ginkgo a little bit more, you know, knowing more about him.
Just through how he interacts with other people and such. Because in a lot of episodes, he actually wanders on back to places, like, several months later just to see how things are going.
Usually in those episodes, they've gone poorly.
Yeah, there's been very little happy ones. I guess that's too. This series can be a little bit depressing because it's kind of melancholy and not everything works out for the best. Sometimes they do, but sometimes they don't. But they're like little vignettes. I mean, you could totally watch them out of order. You wouldn't need to watch them in any sort of order to get.
The only reason to watch them in order is because the way, as the series goes through, the way the Mushi are discussed is kind of. You know, like, the first episode really gives kind of more of just, like, a very introductory kind of idea of what they are. And it's, like, as you go through the episode, subsequently kind of build on that, you know, slowly.
So they don't treat you like an idiot. They assume it's like, okay, if they've watched this episode, they'll know this already, so we don't need to reiterate it.
Yeah,
exactly. And a lot of it, too, is sort of based on a lot of sort of Japanese myth and mythology with stuff. Like, the last episode we watched was basically with the bamboo child. Which is an actual story of a farmer and his peasant wife, you know, wishing they could have a child, but they can't, and it ends up being that they find a baby inside of bamboo.
Hmm.
It was sent by the gods, you know, for them, and it literally was a god child. And a lot of ones, it's the Princess Kaya story where she's the princess of the moon who basically comes down and, you know, is in a bamboo shoot. They cut her out. They raise her until she gets to a certain age, and then she goes back to the moon for some reason. But there's, like, stuff like that that you're kind of, if you know a little bit of Japanese lore and mythology and some of its things in that regard, so you can kind of pick up on episodes like, oh yeah, that makes more sense now in that regard.
Cool.
I don't know. I'm enjoying it. I haven't enjoyed something in a very long time, and this is like, oh, this is nice. It's not fan servicey, it's not like over the top with stuff, it's not like angsty or anything like that. It's just,
I think for me the most annoying one is when they get angsty.
Mhm.
It's like, okay, you're in this situation, accept it, deal with it, move on.
Yeah, it's like, wow, I skipped book 5 of Harry Potter, Order of the Phoenix. Harry is way too angsty in that one for me. It's just, I'm like, get over yourself. But yeah, I'm enjoying it. I would highly recommend it.
Alright, and then what about Mononoke?
Okay. My friend introduced me to this because we were discussing different things. And basically, apparently it's from the same studio that did the Count of Monte Cristo anime. I can't remember what the Sinku or... I can't remember what the other title is of it, but it's basically the anime adaptation of The Count of Monte Cristo. But this particular studio has done a lot of other animes, too, that I've watched, like Paradise Kiss, and Princess Jellyfish, and a whole bunch of other things, too. House of Five Leaves. But they have done a very particular art style for this show. Because it basically follows this guy. Oh, I can never say it.
Genkutsuyu?
Something like that, yeah. Basically, it follows this character called the Medicine Seller, which is based off of this horror series, and he's one of the secondary characters in it. So it's basically following him. And he sort of goes around and exercises Mononoke, which Mononoke basically means, you know, something of the spirit realm, you know, spirits. The style is very reminiscent of Akiyo-e, you know, Japanese woodblock prints, because they're very flat colors with textures and such. Certain things are kind of moving on different parallel planes at the same time. It's really just visually different. I mean, when you first watch it, you're just like, What? And so, but it, the deal with spirits and macabre and horror things, and like the first particular episode is dealing with the spirits of unborn children. And basically dealing with a woman who is pregnant in the series, who when assassins come to kill her, but the unborn spirits kind of protect her and kill him instead. And so the medicine seller is there to see if he can't exorcise and release these unborn baby spirits.
Trying to free them to move on?
Yeah. So, but the thing that's kind of interesting about these episodes is that an episode takes two episodes to get through. So episode one is actually, on episode one and episode two is the same thing. The only problem is you know, there is no domestic release. I only have found them on YouTube. Thankfully they are with the English subtitles. Somebody went through and subtitled all of them. But episode two part two and episode three part two are both non-existent anymore on YouTube. But all the rest of them are up there. And it's only about 11 episodes long. So it's not very much of a time commitment. If you want to just see something that's visually just different, I highly recommend it so far. I've only watched the first episode, so to speak, except for the second part that's not there. And it's just, I want to watch more just because I find it visually interesting. There's not anything else really like it. I mean, Count of Monte Cristo is the only thing close, but Count of Monte Cristo is much more saturated and much more patterned and sometimes much more glaring on the eye. It kind of hurts in some spots. But there's a nice little, you know, write-up on Wikipedia, too, about Mononoke, so you can kind of sort of know what happens in the last bit of the episode and such. But yay, something fun and different.
Cool. Okay, so, talking about the anime actually reminded me of this. The Denver Film Society is actually doing a Miyazaki, a thing for Miyazaki movies. And it's actually starting on Monday, August 13th, with Film on the Rocks. And basically they're going to show Spirited Away at Red Rocks. And then they're actually going to do an entire series of their films. I don't know if they're all going to be Film at the Rocks. But if you follow the NDK group on Facebook, they're actually looking into giving their followers special deals for going to this. Like, I think it was the party bus was like $15 cheaper than it was normally. Or at least that's what she's trying to set up.
Hmm. Well, that's cool. I've heard that movies up at Red Rocks are actually kind of fun. My brother and one of his friends went up there to watch Wayne's World, of all things. He's like, it's one of those silly classic movies that, you know, you have to watch. And he goes, it's just kind of fun out at Red Rocks.
Yeah, the one that I kind of wish I would have been able to go to, but at the time I was working at 5 a.m. in the morning, so that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
Office Space. That would have been entertaining. But yeah, so go ahead and keep a check on the Denver Film Society for the Miyazaki movies.
So are they doing like all of them, or just some of them?
I think they're planning to do as many as they can. I'll have to find additional information on that, and then I'll post it.
Let's see. I've seen Princess Mononoke, Spirited Away, Howl's Moving Castle, Ponyo, and Secret World of Ariesial in theater. I'm afraid I wasn't around yet for maybe some of the earlier Miyazaki films, or they just were not domestically released in the theater here.
I don't think they were all domestically released. I think that started happening after Disney took the license.
Yeah. Well, that's already out in Japan. It's kind of funny. Disney has all the rights to all of Miyazaki's works except for Princess Mononoke. Miramax has that one.
Yeah, they're doing several of them, because like, they're doing Castles in the Sky on... What are they doing, Castles in the Sky?
Well, it technically is Laputa Castle in the Sky, not Castles. But if you go back to the other one, there was the listing of... See, My Neighbor Totoro, Whispers of the Heart is not Miyazaki, but it is Studio Ghibli.
Okay, so maybe they're doing specifically a Ghibli thing. Oh, yeah, Masters of Studio Ghibli Festival Pass.
Okay, yeah, because Cat Returns is also Studio Ghibli, but not necessarily Miyazaki.
Castle in the Sky, okay. Kiki's Delivery Service, Nausicaa Valley of the Wind, Pom Poko, Princess Mononoke, Ocean Waves, Spirited Away, Porco Rosso, My Neighbor's Yamadas, Ponyo, Howl's Moving Castle, and Only Yesterday. So this is going all the way through to October 4th, it looks like.
Cool. I've seen almost all of them on the list. Whispers of the Heart is very tender. It is a very good show. Basically about a boy and girl that sort of, you know, realize that they both have gifts that they really should pursue, and they try to be friends as they each try to do that and be supportive of each other.
All right, and then last thing I'm going to talk about is the Oculus Rift. For those of you who are unaware, it is a system that it's basically a VR helmet type thing for gaming that has, what do you say, a 100-degree viewing angle? 110-degree viewing angle. That way, if you're looking left, right, up, down, the screen's not having to track where you're looking, so there's not as much lag or any lag when you're looking around. They're trying to make it basically more of a in-depth game system. It's going to have a stereoscopic 3D in order to bring the system to a little more life. And I don't necessarily follow this stuff real well, but it does look like this might be the only thing that's tried true commercial release in the video game space since the Virtual Boy came out. Considering how well that did, I don't necessarily fault many companies for that one. But basically the Kickstarter that's being run isn't necessarily for a public release of the system. It's for a dev release for the system so they can create it, get it into developers' hands, and then get feedback on it so they can perfect the consumer release version, and when they release it, already have more games than just Doom 3 available for it.
If I can honestly say, if Doom 3 was the only game for it, I wouldn't be buying it for a long, long time.
But could you imagine if they made a Portal game for it? That'd be interesting. I just say that because, you know, Valve was talking about it.
You still have to see. It's just like, everybody sounds so excited about these things, but then when you put it in people's hands, sometimes it's just like, I'd rather just see it on my TV and have a controller. You know, I was trying to make immersion, you know. I guess it's that step between, you know, what we started with in Holodex. I mean, we gotta have some intermittent steps in between.
Mm-hmm.
And I just keep thinking, like, nah, I have to buy another peripheral. Ah. It's probably not gonna be that bad. I'm just thinking that way.
Well, in the way it sounds, like, it's not something that you probably would have to have for any, I don't know if it would be any games. You know, it sounds like mostly they would try and just build support for it into games as they come out. So it's like, you know, the new first-person shooters would start, you know, they start playing, oh yeah, we're, you know, ready for the
immersion technology.
Yeah. And so, you know, it'd work on your computer screen. It'd also work if you wanted to use this.
Plug it into, like, a USB port and an output to it, or connect it to your monitor port.
I guess that's another thing. They never really address if they're doing it for PC gaming or for console gaming. And is it going to work maybe with that new little Android system?
Yo. Yeah, it would be interesting. Actually, it's interesting how you mentioned it. It's like, I just want it on the TV, given that Android system doing their thing to put everything that, you know, people have been putting in their hands on the blasted TV.
I guess we'll have to see what happens. The future of game. I just think it's kind of cool, though, that people who have good ideas like this can go through Kickstarter and go to the populace who will buy the stuff and say, we have this idea, and we've been, you know, sort of, you know, taking it around to other places, but they want to invest the capital in this because they're unsure of the product or that it's not going to give a big return. So, do you want to support it and see what happens? And a lot of people have been ponying up. It's a good thing to see how the masses, you know, say, yes, this is something we're interested in seeing. Because sometimes, you know, some people think, oh, this is too risky or it's not enough money out of it. Which is why I think sometimes game feels kind of stagnant right now because we're like, oh, we don't want to risk because it so costs so much to make something. We don't want to risk it.
Yeah, it's like they make a game, it takes several $1 million to make it, and you have to give a return to the investors, so you have to make a game that you're hoping everybody will buy in order to return it to your investors. Here, your investors are people who the only return they want is a game, but you don't have to pay them. So if the game does well, you win.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't work, you don't have to worry about paying back the investors. This one specifically, they asked for $250,000. It's still got 26 days to go. and they're at $1,276,614. So I think they hit their goal.
Yeah. Since I wish I had a really good idea that I could put on Kickstarter to get something off the ground, but I don't have anything that good yet.
And they will have one problem, because I saw something on Kickstarter about, you know, some awesome things that got funded that are having issues. One was this guy made a lot of money, and then the Fed, the IRS, took $250,000 of it immediately. So he was running into issues filling all his promises because of that. Another, this one guy wanted to do a limited run of a solid steel pin. He was only going to initially do 60. He ended up having to do like 200. And now he's having issues finding somebody who can actually meet that requirement, the manufacturing requirement. Because the initial company he was going to go through couldn't do it. So he's having fun times with that.
Hopefully he gets something worked out.
So they have this much money, but how much of that is going to get taken out in taxes?
Well, I always figure, plan on 20%.
It's probably a good idea.
It's a good safe, you know, amount. So if you get $1 million, figure 20% is going out. So you're only getting
$750,000.
Mm-hmm. It's not a perfect science, but it's better than, you know, planning on, oh, that only takes
5%. That's 25%.
Oh, mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, 25. Thank you. $800,000.
Okay, that's better. I was thinking, wait, that doesn't add up.
Crystal's getting ahead of herself.
Anywho, so I'm hoping it works well for them. Anytime I see, you know, something radical change in the game space, I'm always kind of hoping for the best for them, because that means that we're going to have leap forwards in technology instead of things, as we were complaining about a moment ago, stagnating. Now, the key is, even if the technology does well, can people use it effectively? I mean, sure, we had the Wii was a great leap in technology, but very, very few things used it effectively.
Yeah, and like, what are you going to do when you want to play with friends, especially if it's only PC or television compatible? Do we all have to have one? What goes on with it? Well, I guess we'll just see. It's a ways away still, so.
Yeah, the developer ones aren't set to ship out until December. Then they have to actually come out with the consumer version of it, which, at least it looks pretty already.
Yeah, I mean, at least, well, that's the very clean version. I don't know if you were noticing in the video
they have
like this whole headgear thing and this part going over the top and.
Okay, at least they want it to look very clean.
Yes.
I mean, it doesn't. Well, it's not something that, you know, I'd probably wear into public too much. It doesn't look absolutely ridiculous.
It looks like a pair of really big black ski goggles.
Yeah. Get some nice. Now, as people that wear glasses, there better be some room in there for these puppies.
Yeah, I could always wear glasses, but sometimes, you know, my eyes just get tired. I need a break.
I can't read the screen now.
I can't read anything on the screen now either. Everything's a blur.
Okay, so yeah, we have about the same issue. Anywho.
Hi, guys!
You suck.
Screw you, Proteus.
Here, have a present.
I don't want your trash.
Anywho, well, that's about all I had to talk about today was the Tycodem. Star Wars. I didn't talk about Star Wars at all. Star Wars The Old Republic. It came out in December. They're not doing real well. Believe it or not, I think people are getting tired of MMOs, which after a while just seem to be doing the same thing over and over and over. So they're going to a free-to-play model. Basically, you'll have the game free up to level 50, which is the current cap. You'll have access to most of the systems. They are basically going to still have your subscription model, and they're giving those people an actual value for the system. One, logging on, free-to-play is in the standard queue. A person that is paying gets pushed to the front of queue automatically. Free-to-play people are limited on how many space missions they can do per day, whereas the subscribers get unlimited, and it kind of goes on like that. Free-to-play people only have limited access to this. Subscribers get this. They're also adding a special new currency which can be used to buy customization items like different costumes or little pets. So while it is kind of sad that a multi-million dollar game that probably has more voice acting than some movies do, it has having to go free to play, it kind of was seen coming probably by a lot of people, I think.
I'm gonna actually try it now, because I really don't want to buy two copies of the games and monthly subscriptions for two people. This gets costly after a while, especially if I don't know if I want to make that much of an investment in it.
Exactly, and there's that too. This can get people in. Maybe they'll really enjoy it. Like, well, I want the extra bonuses that come with being a subscriber, and then they start subscribing.
Yeah,
I mean, at the very worst, what this does is people start playing. They may never really pay, but at least they get their server populations up. I think I heard a number somewhere, and don't quote me on this because I don't remember where I saw it, but I heard they were below 1 million subscribers. This game costs too much money for that. So at least this will get their server populations up, so the the MMO will actually be doing something instead of, you know, trying to find somebody to do a group quest with, and all you get is crickets.
Let's talk about trying to find and pick up groups in WoW at, you know, 7 o'clock New Zealand time.
There are nobody except for the Chinese gold farmers and somebody who's staying up really, really late in the U.S. I'm surprised it's not doing as well as that. I mean, it's Star Wars. Whereas Star Wars is kind of in that sort of lull, like, course, like, oh, yeah, Star Wars, or...
Well, I think it's just, regardless of how much you try to change up an MMO...
You can't really change too much of the formula. I mean...
At the very core, it's all the same. You are given a quest of some sort, you complete the quest, you get experience, and you get...
A reward.
You get a reward, and eventually you get points to increase your character. I don't care what people say, like, the Secret World is supposed to be a levelless game, is a classless game. But you still get points to put into your character, and that's going to define your class, how you put those points in. So, yeah. So I think, I don't know, I see more free-to-play MMOs going. I'm kind of hoping Guild Wars 2 does well. Because what they're doing is, they're not a free-to-play model, technically. You buy the game, and that's it. There's no subscription, there's no convenience items that I'm aware of, at least there wasn't in the original Guild Wars.
You have to pay a monthly fee?
Correct. All you do is you buy, the game's probably going to run about $60, but that's it.
See, I could live with that.
I can live with that, too. I can, you know, that's why I have the original Guild Wars, and actually I enjoyed what I played of it. And I really liked, one of the things I really like is, because I always play a caster, I like good casting animations. And this one, the character I was playing, when they had a long spell, they actually rose up from the ground, did all these arcane movements with their hands, and it actually had magic following them, and then they would cast the spell.
That's just wow, it's...
Exactly. And different spells had, you know, the more complex the casting was for it. It's something I actually kind of liked about it. Anywho, now I'm done.
Now we're done. I have nothing else.
All right, well then, go ahead and visit us at thegameslave.com, where you can find our forum, store, Twitter feed, Facebook feed, and so on and so forth. I'm going to be getting a new Game Over article up here shortly, since I beat Assassin's Creed Revelations last night. And in the meantime, game on.
Game on.
Game on.